Hey everyone, we are back for another exciting episode of
the Lucas and Lee Podcast.
And we have yet again, for the second time back, a special guest. Not only is she a doctor of psychotherapy, she also is Lee's resident ex-girlfriend.
Okay.
That's right, we have Dr. Allison Bronneman.
Dr. Allison.
Now, those of you who are like, what, Lee has an ex? Yeah, so Allison and I dated at the end of second half of 2023.
Okay, 2020. It's not that
second half of 2023.
Yeah, so it's been
around this time in 2023.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. In fact, this time in 2023, Allison had just gone to the Orange and Black Ball with me as my date.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I had.
And she loved her hairdo for that.
I got a devastating hairdo that night that was irreparable before the actual event.
You know, her hairdo, and I say this.
There was no way out, Lee.
I say this with all affection. Yes. The hairdo made you look like you belonged on the cast of The Gilded Age on HBO. You know, that
it
show.
It was so 1800s.
Yes, that show from the 1880s. Yes.
I know. My hair, it just has a life of its own. I just go with the flow, but
I never have to worry about anything about hair.
You're saying.
No, you don't.
Yes.
Never. You don't. I got a new hairdo for the Orange and Black this year on Thursday. I was looking pretty damn snazzy.
You were happy.
I was looking snazzy on Friday night, I gotta say.
Nice.
So, you know, since the last time Lucas and I were on with our podcast, there might have been a big drop in pop culture. That is right.
Okay.
That is right. Taylor Swift's new album hit.
Woo!
The new album hit. I have listened to it 2 times already.
And I was interested because you didn't give it rave reviews.
Well, no.
You did not give rave reviews. I said,
look, there are three songs on there I really, really, really like. I like Life of Ophelia.
Three out of how many? How many songs are
12.
On?
12. There are 12 on.
Three
there.
Out of 12 is not a good number.
It's higher
that
than
that. That is not a good number. That is
okay,
it's
so terrible
not a good
number.
For the record,
3 out of 12 is a terrible number.
For the record, on most like album CD thingies, CDs, I'm dating myself. On most albums, like there's maybe one or two that
on
I like.
On Joshua Tree by U2, how many songs do you like?
I don't remember what was on there. I can tell you the only two. Take that back. The only single album of all time that I thought every song was a banger was Hotel California by the Eagles.
That's one of the best.
The Chronic.
Okay.
I do believe
there were some albums in 1997 that came out that were pretty darn good.
Section
I don't know what they are.
Playground?
I don't know everything. I feel like that whole year.
Do you know that
everything.
Song?
Everything.
I smell sex
yes,
and candy.
That song annoyed the crap out of me when it came out. I was not. So look, Life of Ophelia, I think, is a banger. Life of a Showgirl, Fate of Ophelia, Life of a Showgirl, and Opalite. Those are, there are some other good ones on there, but those are the three on there that I think are absolutely.
You didn't like Wood.
I did not like Wood. I could have gone without hearing about Travis Kelce's Wee Wee.
Maybe the song is why he's not playing so well.
Probably. I mean, if someone says
I've heard there's a lot going on with that album that's, you know, some of it's going really well. Some of it is not.
Well, the thing is, as somebody who's not a Swiftie, and I don't dislike her. I really don't have any feel. There's songs I like by her. I mean, but I'm not a Swiftie. I mean, but I'm not against her. But as somebody who's on the outside, I haven't heard much about the album. And all the other albums, when they come out, all I hear is nonstop talk about it. And that's why I was asking Lee, you know, this one's not doing as well as the other albums because I'm not looking for it, but I'm not seeing anything.
I think it's expectations. I think, look, after the Eras tour, after all the Taylor and Travis hype, after the engagement, after the way they announced this album, we're going on the podcast, the biggest podcast of all time. It barely nudged out our podcast.
I know, barely.
Barely nudged out our podcast.
Barely.
But there was a lot of hype, and I think everyone was expecting this album to be like a masterpiece. Instead of just it being a really good album, which it is, I think it's a really good album. Everyone was expecting it to be like the masterpiece of masterpieces.
Well, I mean, there's very few albums that are like the Hotel California by
Eagles. Desert Highway.
Or Exile on Main Street by Rolling Stones.
I'm having flashbacks.
Warm smell of colitas rising up through the air.
You know, I'm just waiting for an artist to come out to change music. Like, I remember, I don't know if it can ever happen again, but I know that when, you know,
it will absolutely happen again. I believe in humans and music.
I remember when Nevermind came out by Nirvana and how that literally changed music. It killed hair bands. Yep. It changed music.
Oh my God. I literally went from wearing like bongo jeans with suede boots and having my hair like in a large circle to the next day, hair flat, straightened, wearing a flannel and corduroys from some person's closet. You know,
and I'm waiting for that to happen again. I want that.
It was an instant overnight success. I remember.
Yeah, like, it was awesome. It was amazing. And you know, Nirvana paved the way for Pearl Jam and Soundgarden and all the other amazing artists.
Stone Temple Pilots.
STP. Scott Weiland was a genius. Rest in peace.
Smashing Pumpkins.
The
Smashing Pumpkins album.
Oh my God, Green Day.
Oh yeah, despite all the rage,
I'm still just a rat in a cage. Yes, that album was amazing.
Disarm was on that album too. I think that song, Disarm, is a phenomenal
Tonight, which is a great music video, by the way.
I mean, they were actually very good in their music videos. What was that one where he was in the milk truck?
I remember the MTV video.
Oh God, it's such a great song. Yes, yes. Yes.
I love Smashing Pumpkins.
Anyway, hey, there
was one, not Aria Speedwagon. Who's the
take
band that
run,
like,
baby.
It felt so good, like
that's
Something
the way you
Machine.
Wanna, baby, and you won't have me around. Mm.
There's some other band that I swear still reminds me of the 90s. Oh God, I can't remember their Stone Temple Pilots, but oh, Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes.
I listen to Tommy Morello's radio show
Rage
all the time.
Against the Machine.
Yeah.
Yes. The pride of Harvard University, Tommy Morello.
Amazing.
Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant.
That's when all of our little attachment patterns were being played out in high school, you guys.
Yeah.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. Yeah. We're the renegades of funk. We're the renegades of funk. Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, whenever it is campaign season, I need to get fired up in the middle of a campaign. I put on some Rage Against the Machines and imagine I am taking down the man.
Yeah, well, you know, it's
taking down the man.
One thing I always remember is Jack had a football camp in Sacramento the day after all the protests happened in Sacramento.
Oh.
And I was driving through downtown Sacramento and there's all kinds of boarded up buildings and writings on the wall. And I was listening to Rage as I drove down the street. And I was like, this is almost like surreal. It's like, I'm looking at all this stuff on the buildings boarded up, all the like words and stuff on the buildings and stuff. And I'm listening to Rage. I'm like, this is like the music video.
Like you actually understand the song, like where it's coming from. Yeah.
Hey,
I'm a huge fan of Van Deluxe right now. I feel like he's putting out, he found a, oh my God, this song, Ain't No Mountain High Enough. Who is
originally
that by?
Originally sung by Martin Gaye.
Yes.
Tammy Terrell.
Yes. Okay. So he went back, he was granted access back to their recordings and you can hear them moving around, like they're stomping their feet, they're like tapping their feet, they're tapping their fingers, and he made a backbeat of just their physical movements and then put it with the lyrics, and it is, oh my God. I love it. I played it all summer.
Yeah, that's awesome.
He reinvented their bodies, like, you know, in real time. Art. Like, it was art. Yes, I love that.
So as much as we are enjoying being music critics, Allison, Dr. Bronneman, we actually have you on here to talk about a new term. that you have come up with and lay it on us.
Okay. Well, okay. So this article came out of like not only my own experience with dating, but it's like one of the things I always hear from people is, oh, you're being avoidant. Like I hear people throwing around the term that people are being avoidant. And I always think about it. And me and my therapist talked about it. And I was like, did anyone ever think that they're actually, that's like very hard-earned avoidance. Like they have learned something about a type of person, or they have learned to trust themselves in a given situation. And so I don't know if you guys can relate to it. Like
100%.
You can. Okay.
I avoid people quite frequently. Quite frequently. I try to avoid people as much as possible.
Well, and I feel like in middle life, it's like it is the de facto response most of the time, because you just see trouble like as clear as day.
Yeah.
Like, you can see drama, you can see trouble. Right. So I was thinking about this. It's sort of like it creates like a push-pull dynamic if you do not trust yourself. Right. But if you trust yourself, it's really easy to just not get involved. But part of this is like, we all have a deep longing to be with another person. Like most people, whatever their sexual orientation is, there's a deep longing for closeness alongside this undeniable pressure to connect that I think a lot of anxious individuals feel. And so that's kind of as far as I got. I mean, I don't know if you guys have any questions for me before. It can sound kind of dry unless we're talking about examples. You know what I mean?
So I guess what, and correct me if you're wrong, but basically hard-earned avoidance is our inner gut telling us, showing us red flags.
Absolutely. Okay? Yes.
And so, you know, we all see the memes on like Instagram. Mm-hmm. Oh, look at all those red flags. I'm going to run right towards it.
Yes, exactly. So it's like a moth to a flame.
Yes. So basically hard-earned avoidance is us trusting our gut when we see a red flag.
Yes.
And steering very clear. And yes. I think.
Without devaluing the other person, right? Like there's a very important like end thought, which like there's also another myth that, you know, attachment patterns are not these rigid fixed things. They come out in situations. There has to be a situation that activates it. And so if you're getting a red flag, that's the tip of the iceberg, right? Which we all have learned the hard way. Like, oh, you know, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. Like I'm just thinking of an example. I went out to dinner with this one guy, and don't worry, it wasn't Lee.
Yeah.
Lee was always a gentleman when it came to buying dinner, right? So I remember I went out to this dinner and I had met this man at the farmer's market and we went and had dinner and he started saying weird stuff at the table. And I was like, oh, whatever.
What weird stuff? Like, what's a weird thing?
He was sort of like saying stuff like, oh, you know, when it was our first date, like I literally didn't know him. And he was starting to like make all these big projections and plans about our relationship. Yeah. And I was just oh, it's a little too much for me. Again, I err on the side of hard-earned avoidance. And I was like, but that's weird. And then I was like, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, I don't really believe in marriage. And I was like, oh, well, I do, you know. Oh, God, here we go. So I was like, well, why would you want to plant an orchard and have a bunch of trees with no fruit? I was like, when you get married, you get like the fruit. You know, which I know that may be a controversial belief. So I'm not saying that's for everyone. That's just, again, my hard-earned wisdom. And so, you know, it was kind of just awkward. We're getting weirder and weirder. Like, I feel like things are getting weirder and weirder. Then the waiter brought the check to the table. And I don't know why. This was like a universe moment. The sun was coming from behind and he pulled out all these 20s. And I could see that there was no marker behind in the 20s. You know how they have like that strip?
Yeah.
Oh, and my. I realized that they were counterfeit.
Counterfeit 20s.
Counterfeit 20s. And so I just looked at him and I was like, you know, I was like, oh my God, already, like, can't even make it through the dinner. Like, so basically what I'm saying is, I'll tell you guys how I handled it if you want
to
know.
What you're saying is you were an accessory to a crime.
What
you're saying?
There's a lot
no,
of
I actually asked him to excuse himself from the table and to leave.
Well, as you should. I mean,
first off, good for you.
But that's like, there was a lot of red flags here.
Oh my God. But it was like my things were, it's like, yeah, like everything just wasn't adding up from these little tiny indicators. Now, granted, I'm a therapist, so I can be a little bit, you know, a lot of beige flags are red to me, which is, you know, so I was like, oh my God, what a disaster, right? How did this person enter my field of my reality? And again, in these moments, we're sort of in a fight or flight moment, right? Like, how am I supposed to respond to a counterfeit dinner as a grown woman in her 40s? Like, you know, so in any case, the point is there were red flags 45 minutes earlier and it was the tip of the iceberg, right? And so that's not the case with most dates. And I forgot what the question was because now I'm having flashbacks on that dinner.
I guess here's a question I have. So
yes,
harder and avoidance is very intuitive in people.
Yes.
You see a red flag, you know,
I'm out. One red flag. And I,
but you get all these internet memes that are, you know, look, memes for the most part come from some sort of reality. And yes, there are both men and women who see a red flag and think they're Ferdinand the Brave Bull and
exactly,
go straight for it.
Right.
So what is it?
Oh, okay, so go ahead.
What is it about a person to like totally distrust their gut, not go with that hard-earned avoidance, especially at our age? We're talking, you know, this is
we are in midlife. Like, this is it.
Yeah.
I'm over midlife. I'm on the other side of the hill.
So
we are now conditioned. It's official.
What causes people to basically say there's a red flag, I'm totally going to go for that anyway?
Well, a lot of times I feel like they're usually in denial. I feel like denial is the biggest barrier.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Usually it's like you're getting all these hits like, oh, like, right? Like, I just felt like it was Alice in Wonderland. Like, I didn't even know people still did that kind of stuff. I was like, fake money? That's like the 80s. I was like, what? You know,
I've never met anybody with fake money before.
I never have either. I was like, what am I supposed to do with this? But I was like, you know, I'm not a doormat. But I was thinking of the Allison 10 or 15 years earlier. She would have just like froze and like let him pay for a dinner with the fake money, right? Like pre-marriage so it's like at that time thinking of not having any experience, but also being really wrapped up in like the fight or flight response, right? So attachment patterns, they're what are called a derivative of fight or flight. And they get activated when you're in an unknown circumstance. And just think about any time you've been dating and you get hurt or upset or you just feel like you got blindsided by something. You know, we don't act like our best self, right? So I don't know if that answers your question, Lee.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I think
it's a great answer.
I think the most important thing also I want to just correct is it's a myth that people have a style of attachment patterns, because you're seeing the research on that is like built in a situation that is very contained and is only stressful. So you do not get to see how they're reacting to the rest of the situations in their life.
Well, and we talked about that last time you were on, how attachment styles come in and out depending on, well, I think two things. They come in and out depending on the situation you're in. And mm-hmm. I also think self-awareness is big, because I think we have discussed, and as you learned firsthand, Lee has a very anxious attachment style.
He can. You and, make me look secure.
But knowing that and realizing that, that is something that I think I have worked on
and, getting, you
know,
yeah.
And have gotten a lot better at. Not, you know, needing the constant, not needing the constant reassurance or whatnot. And, you know, really not, you know, really putting my anxious, you know, calming my anxious attachment style, basically.
Right. And you're learning how to do that through self-regulation, right? Yeah. Which is kind of like piercing through like blame and shame and saying, oh, like, you know, like in my example, like I don't need someone who's doing counterfeit anything in my life, right? Yeah. Some people might not care. They might be like, sweet, where are we going after this?
Well, I don't know. That's a pretty big felony, isn't it? I mean,
that's, depending on how much.
That's prison time.
Depending on how much the dinner was.
That's prison time.
Depending on how much the dinner was. Depending on how much the dinner was, District Attorney Ron Freitas could charge them with a felony.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, but how do you even know how to react in a moment like that? Like,
you,
like
the, I'm from the suburbs. Get the bleep out of here.
Yeah, that's what I did, basically.
But here's the thing. You also have to be secure enough with yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
To stand up for yourself and yes. do that.
Exactly. Right. And so that was like a very defining moment for me in my own growth. But I think so when you're talking about doing that self-regulation, we kind of have to default to that when we realize in the environment, there's not a safe person to co-regulate with.
Yeah.
Right. So, well, so
give it a round of applause yes. for handling that the correct way.
Thank you. Thank you.
Gold star for Dr. Bronneman.
I hope your listeners, I hope this doesn't sound too heady for the listeners. Is this okay?
This is totally, yes.
Okay.
Our listeners love
petty.
You guys are listening.
So the other thing that we often discuss is
yes.
the need for, in relationships, the need for constant dopamine.
Okay, yes.
And there was an Instagram clip that I saw that got me a little fired up. Not as much as the one we're going to talk about after this, but it still got
okay.
me a little fired up.
Okay.
And it was a woman basically saying, you are allowed to end a relationship with a really good guy. You are allowed to end a relationship with a guy that checks all the boxes, meets all whatevers, all that fun stuff. That you're into, that mm-hmm. your family is into, your friends love him, everyone loves him. He's doing everything right. And you're allowed to leave him because when, in her exact words, when you get into bed next to him, you feel dead inside.
Oh,
that, yeah.
Well, I mean, you are technically allowed to leave anybody at yes. any time. In this
anytime.
So she does have a point on that.
She does.
Right. I think it all depends on how much a relationship means to you, because there are people that need constant dopamine. There's people that jump out of planes that are perfectly, you know, fixed, and they want to get that. I personally wouldn't want to do that.
And I guess my problem with that clip is this woman was basically saying, unless you're getting that dopamine, that there has to be a dopamine hit every day for this woman, that mm-hmm. a relationship isn't something that you build with a strong foundation, that you know there's going to be times where you look at your partner and you're like, what the hell was I thinking? But because you have that foundation, because you have that belief in each other, because you both treat each other like you would like to be treated, that this is a relationship worth sticking in and working and fixing and working out. And it's the fact that this woman needs that dope. Not only does she need that dopamine every day, she's basically saying, if you crawl into bed and feel dead with this guy, that you can just leave. You don't have a discussion with them about it.
Well, that'd be an awful, awful thing to do. If you're laying in bed with somebody feeling dead inside,
don't work on it. Don't right. talk to your partner, man or woman, and say, hey, here's how I am feeling.
But feeling dead inside? I've never felt dead inside
yeah,
next to anybody.
That
is kind of a reason to leave. If you're laying next to somebody feeling dead inside.
Yes.
Lucas, I think you are hitting the nail on the head. And I think this is where, again, these are all my thoughts. Everything is for entertainment purposes, but for someone to feel dead inside and to think that that's about something outside of them is
that's them.
That's yeah. There's that's the first thing is like that dead particular. If you're feeling like that, that's about what's happening inside of you. Something is either coming up or needs to be processed. Yes. So
you need help if you're feeling dead inside.
Exactly. Right. And then at the same time, we all kind of feel dead inside sometimes. Like it is like a passing thing, right? I feel like
I felt dead inside after Fred Warner got injured and was out for
watch the 49ers next week. You'll feel dead inside.
I know.
About Fred Warner.
Yeah, I mean, I think those feelings can happen, but I mean, with just leaving someone because of it just sounds so short-sighted.
Well, yeah, I think you need help.
And that was my problem with this woman is that she's out here saying, just go. Don't, you know, don't work on it. Don't fix it. Don't try to not fix it. Don't work on it.
She might be doing people favors by leaving, though. If you're feeling dead inside like that, I mean, you're really you're not well. You're sick.
Exactly. And I feel like, but it is like a triggering thing to hear because what I think you're hearing is a complete dismissal of a person's feelings.
Yes.
From both people in an intimate setting. And that is, again, that's a survival strategy. Yeah, that is like, and that's not hard-earned avoidance. That's like pure avoidance, right?
She needs to read your book.
She does.
Yes.
Speaking of which, okay, you've been working on this since 2023. I know firsthand.
Oh my God. I know. I'm getting closer. I've got like a little,
The Secure Self. We see the title, The Secure Self.
The Secure Self, Your Attachment Pattern Reset. It is supposed to come out in January. I'm working
out here, 2026.
So I'm very excited about it. And it's a book, it's about attachment, but it's about, everyone says, oh, take care of yourself, love yourself. But no one ever shows the pathway to do that. And so I actually, with the help of like neuroscience research, I actually mapped out how to sort of use all of your dysfunctional attachment patterns, each one by one, to sort of build a pathway out of that kind of agony and hopelessness. So hopefully, I mean, it's definitely a little bit intellectual. You know, you got to be into your deep self-help. It's like definitely deep self-help. Which in midlife, I feel like we have to be no matter what.
Yeah. Especially that last one when you were talking about, she needs to be.
Mr. Dead Inside.
Dead Inside.
Do we yet know where people can get your book when it is available?
Eventually when it's available, yes. I will be on Amazon. I will be on, what's that other one? Google Play? Is that
Google Play. Yeah.
Amazon. It'll be distributed with Barnes & Nobles as well. So, I'm excited. It should be really, it's exciting. And it's a definite labor of love. Hopefully, you know, if I don't get it right this time, I'll do it again.
I'm sure you'll get it right. Yeah. Okay. Now it's time for me to bring up my biggest peeve of the week.
That's your least favorite person, right?
My least favorite person. Goddamn Kristen Cavallari. This woman keeps on invading my Instagram feed, I do not know.
We wouldn't have a podcast, was it?
No, we wouldn't. We would not.
Oh my God. I like her.
Explain who she is to the people that might not know.
Okay, so Kristen Cavallari was once the main antagonist on this show called The Hills, which was set in OC, Lauren Conrad, Kristen Cavallari.
Spencer and all that.
Yeah. Kristen Cavallari then, grows up and marries Jay Cutler, he of the overrated quarterback for the Denver Broncos and Chicago Bears.
He had diabetes. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
Impressive to be an athlete with and manage that.
Yeah.
So their relationship went in the toilet because I think she like was talking about ghosts and shit.
And Jay Cutler didn't like that.
Ghosts? Yeah, did you say ghosts?
She's weird. Kristen Cavallari is weird.
Jay Cutler saw ghosts in the football field. But not
he did. Well, they weren't ghosts. Really? They were the opposing linebacker.
Just keep in mind, I'm from Marin County, so I might be a little curious about those stories. But
oh my gosh, I do. I do remember that you are indeed from Marin. So Kristen Cavallari has a podcast. And on this podcast, she attempts to be as annoying as possible. Just annoying as possible. So she has a dating strategy, which obviously worked wonders.
Ooh, do I get to comment on it?
You can comment on it. So she is on with that millionaire matchmaker lady.
Okay.
And her, she says you should date three men at once.
Kristen Cavallari.
Kristen Cavallari says you should date three men at once, a pair and a spare. That way, you will never be dateless.
So you're dating a pair. Like, what does she mean by a pair?
Dating two guys?
Like, close, so two close contenders.
Yeah, two contenders.
Two contenders, and there's just
poor and one guy, one guy on the roster.
Yes, exactly. Go ahead, Lee. You don't like that.
No. Why don't you give us your opinions on this, Allison?
I think it's fantastic. I agree with it 1,000%.
If you're not in a committed relationship.
Hold on. You're not committed. No. There's a follow-up question. So tell me, when we were dating, was I part of a pair or was I the spare?
No. Everyone, okay. Everyone.
You know you left yourself open for that. You left yourself 100%
the dating. Okay. But when you're initially dating, you don't know who's going to step into a primary position.
That's great. That's fair. But when you're dating somebody in a committed relationship, you should not be dating other people. So I 100% agree.
The way Kristen Cavallari was stating it was literally seriously dating three a people. Pair and a spare.
Yeah, so like if you're committed, if you're telling these people you're committed and they believe that there's commitment and they believe that they're the only person that you're seeing, that's wrong.
Because I'm chomping at the bit here, you guys.
Go, by all means.
Okay, so think of it like this. For a woman to feel fully emotionally secure, there has to be not just commitment. I hear you and Lee, you and I talked about this a lot. It's like there's a difference between exclusivity and commitment. And if the relationship, there's these great theories about men should be the emotional leader in relationships because they operate at a different pace emotionally than women. Like they describe the emotional centers for women as like the autobahn or a superhighway, right? We've got like 6 times more neuronal tracks. Whereas for men, you guys have your sexual centers are like 6 times greater than women's. So neurobiologically, a fresh idea and a fresh take on this is that women should be regulating the sexual pace of a relationship and men should be regulating the emotional pace of a relationship. And if men are committing but not moving you to exclusive, then you get to date as many as you want.
I think that's somewhat of a cop-out. I think once you're committed, you're in exclusive relationship. Like if I say, hey, we're exclusive now, you know, we're dating, or if she says you want to be exclusive and I say yes, then I would expect that in turn that she wouldn't be seeing somebody else because we always, as men, get trashed. Like, I've talked to multiple
girls. You guys do. It's awful.
I've talked to multiple girls, and I've done the whole pair in the spare, and then they find out I didn't do anything wrong because I wasn't in a committed relationship. And I get ripped apart, and I'm just another jerk guy.
Right.
But when a woman does it, they get applauded.
Yes. And that's because like the way that it's set up, like in the social structure is like, theoretically women make the choice, but men are supposed to offer the choice. So like if a man hasn't offered the choice or one of the partners hasn't offered the choice, then theoretically until there's a ring on it, it's kind of fair.
Well, you know, it's a lot easier for a woman to get a date than a man. I mean, you could have.
I don't believe that that's the case anymore. I think it's
100% the case. As a you could have a guy that looks like pick the hottest guy in the world, and he's on Tinder, and then you pick a woman who's not bad looking, and the not bad looking will definitely get more.
That is true. There is
there's way more options.
Yes.
Way more options for women than there is for men.
I would just like to state the last half of 2023, I did not have a pair and a spare.
Okay.
I
just want to pause here. You guys are having the response that you should have. You guys are having the response like, I do not like this. This is not okay. Like, and that is motivation to have you literally put a ring on a finger. So if you're feeling like that about a woman, it's like, what are you waiting for? Right? That's what these women are saying.
What are you waiting for?
Well, I'm like, waiting for equal commitment because they're seeing other people.
Right. So, and how are they going to stop doing that when you put a ring on their finger? Right?
That's what
Patty Stanger's all about. It's like, you put the ring on the finger to do an actual trial commitment. That's her whole theory. So I understand where it's coming from because I've watched The Millionaire Matchmaker like millions of times. So you guys are getting activated because it's asking you to put a ring on it. If you put a ring on it, that girl will break up with those other guys.
Okay, I'm getting activated because it came out of Kristen Cavallari's mouth. That's why I'm activated. Let's be very
Why
clear.
Is that so activating?
Because
he hates her. He hates
because
her.
I can't
You guys are like men.
He
like
watches the podcast constantly.
No, it invades my Instagram
really
feed. It invades my Instagram feed like a foreign invader I have to repel.
Lucas has got it right. It reeled you guys in. And it's really making you think. Oh, and like, God. So the idea is the man should be setting the emotional pace. And at our age, like 3 to 6 months, I mean, there's male coaches who say a guy knows if he's going to marry you within 0.02 of a second.
I think that I know.
I think that's a little quick.
No, I think when I'm on, I don't know how quick it is but I know on the first date if there's going to be a second date or if I'm going to be.
Thank you. You just validated. And if you're dating someone for 3 months and you have not brought up exclusivity, marriage, and moving in,
I'm not serious about it.
You're not serious about it. And you know that. So that's where I'm just going to like, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, but she's got to look out for herself. And be looking for her husband.
And I, you know, I will look, I agree with you as far as, you know, at X amount of time, you know that you're serious about someone.
You know, within minutes of.
Yeah. And you should express that. I think.
At least those introverts know that.
I have been in a situation. I've been in a situation where I've known that I was totally into someone and my feelings were strong for that person, yet I was afraid to tell them because I thought that would scare them off. And this is like a few months into us seeing each other. Mm-hmm. And I thought if I said, hey, here's how I really feel about you, they literally would have been like,
Yeah, it can happen. But that's about putting your money where your mouth is and betting on
yourself. Put your money where your mouth is. And like, you know, I think people nowadays, it's even more important to do that. But yeah, again, it's everyone has their own beliefs and their own comfort level.
And bet on yourself.
Yeah, you got to bet on yourself. And we do know what we want and what we need, especially in this age range.
Bet on yourself. And look, honestly, in that situation, it was a past situation. But in that situation, yeah, you know, I wish at the time I would have come out and said, here's how I feel about you.
But now you've grown, you can do it the next time.
I've grown and I can do it the next time. So there we go.
Yeah. Just like it was my job to ask that person to leave the table and buy my own dinner, it's your job to like set the pace for your emotions.
Right? Yes. And so speaking of reeling us in, what has been reeling us in on TV lately, Lucas?
Well, the World Series.
Yeah, me. Major League Baseball.
Oh, I mean, it's pretty good.
Let's fire the Blue Jays manager. What's the score right now?
Which I know. I know Allison knows so much about me.
I know. I was like, the score. The score. Where do I find it?
The Blue Jays manager is an idiot. He's it's 10-3 now.
Oh, gosh. It was, oh, my God.
And this is all at home. The Mariners are going to possibly sweep the Blue Jays. If the Blue Jays don't win game three, it's over.
It's
and
over.
The Blue Jays manager has screwed his team over twice by pulling the pitcher early.
Oh, why is he doing that?
Because he's an idiot. He's Bob Melvin 2.0.
So here.
This is tragic.
And Lisa,
I'm a Blue Jays
fan.
Blue Jay fan. I am a Blue Jay fan.
They're Kelly Gruber.
I love Blue Jays. Like, they're so cute.
That is not why I'm a Blue Jays fan, Allison.
Kelly Gruber and George Bell. And
yeah, like, I am an old school Blue Jays fan. Dave Steve, Jimmy
oh,
Key,
yeah, that's the, yeah.
Kelly Gruber, Tony Fernandez.
The shortstop, right?
Who I modeled my batting stance in the Little League after.
He was second base, right? Was he second base?
Shortstop. Yeah. So Blue Jays were actually the first team I ever saw in person. I have family still in Mississauga, Canada. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Look, if you were Portuguese and you came over to the North American continent from Portugal, you went to one of two places. You went to Hillmar, California.
Oh, God.
Or you went to Mississauga, Canada.
So did you see the Blue Jays in Exhibition Stadium or the Sky Dome?
Exhibition Stadium.
Look at that. That's old school right there.
Old school.
That's like Candlestick Park.
And I had the old, like,
Candlestick. Mm-hmm. You guys, I was at the last game in Candlestick.
Yeah, Candlestick's my favorite ballpark ever.
So here are the final four. Okay, we've got Toronto, Seattle. And then we have the Brew Crew and the Dodgers.
Yes. And please.
Now that sounds fun. Yes.
Please, Brewers.
Yeah.
Please, Brewers.
Brew Crew.
Please.
Okay, yes. So who do you think it's going to be, the Blue Jays and the Brewers? Is that like...
Well, I don't think the Blue Jays have a shot now.
I think... I'm calling it right now. The Blue Jays will storm back from 0-2, and they will face the Brewers. And it'll be a battle of Labatt's Blue versus Pabst Blue Ribbon. That's going to be the World Series.
That would be nice. And I would love that to happen. But if I were to go with what I think will happen, it will be the Mariners versus the Dodgers.
No, nobody wants the Dodgers.
I don't want this. I want the Brewers, and I hope that I'm wrong. But the way life works, it's going to be the Mariners versus the Dodgers, and everybody in America is going to be rooting for the Mariners or for Dodgers fans, and everybody's going to be all excited, and then the Dodgers will win in five.
You know, the most annoying fans.
That's the worst news, but I think you're right.
I know, it's awful. I hope the Brewers can do it, but I definitely could see it being a letdown where the Mariners, they're all hyped up,
some of the most annoying fans in all sports are actually Dodgers fans.
Oh, I'd say 99% of the annoying fans in sports are Dodgers fans. We saw them at the game we went to.
Yes, they were annoying.
Oh, you guys did.
They were annoying. They were annoying as all fuck.
So I feel like that should definitely be on dating profiles. Like,
yes,
I would not be
Dodgers fan or not.
There actually are on dating profiles. There are, if you are an X fan, swipe left. Right up there.
I love that. Now, if that's not hardened avoidance, I don't know what is.
Right up there with swipe the way you voted.
Oh, yeah.
Swipe the way you voted.
See, all those are hardened avoidance.
So this brings us to the worst week ever.
I think my fellow bald friend.
Yeah.
State College, Pennsylvania had the worst week ever, and he got fired. It was hours after the game, wasn't it?
Literally on the tarmac.
What happened?
Coach Franklin, the coach of the Penn State Nittany Lions, managed to destroy the program that is a legendary program.
Oh.
Very legendary.
He took it and he just like squeezed every bit of juice. When they lost to UCLA, that was
embarrassing. But Northwestern?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, come on. Northwestern is more likely to produce a CEO of Intel than they are to produce a national football title contender.
Yeah, and Franklin got – I felt bad for him somewhat on Saturday. the whole stadium booed him as he was walking off the stadium, and his wife like hugged him.
Oh,
that's his name is fired on the tarmac, as you said.
Oh. You know, but I'm going to have to say this might be one of the weakest, worst week evers, because as much as it sucks that James Franklin, you know, lost three in a row and basically went from one game away from playing for the national championship to now being unemployed.
Oh,
what was his contract buyout, Lucas?
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's insanity. I mean, he's doing nothing now.
He is getting paid $49 million to be fired.
No wonder they're like, honey, come here. Yeah, honey, come here. Let's go grab
now
some
you get
dinner.
To be home all the time.
Yeah.
Now you get to be home with me all the time.
Don't get me started. Billy Napier needs to be fired yesterday. In fact, when they announced yesterday that James Franklin was fired, I took that. I reposted it to my Instagram stories and put the caption.
Did you tag
Florida? I did. Hey, at Florida Gators, are you paying attention?
Oh, my God.
I saw how much that Napier's contract buyout was, and I literally commented, I will donate to this buyout fund. I will donate to the buyout fund.
Get Napier out.
My Gators need... They need Lane Kiffin or Chucky, John Gruden.
Well, I don't know. Gruden. I'd worry about Gruden because the whole Belichick thing didn't work out too well in North Carolina.
But, well, that's because Bill Belichick lets his 24-year-old girlfriend run everything. Lane Kiffin, you want to win a national championship. Come do it in the swamp, please. I'm begging you.
I hear everyone. I thought everyone's leaving the swamp.
No, that's the other swamp in Washington, not the actual swamp people want to be in Gainesville. Two different swamps.
Got it.
And on that note, we would like to thank Dr. Allison Bronneman.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for having me. I hope it was helpful and fun.
Great.
Her book. What your book title again?
Oh yeah, you could just DM me at the Dr. Allison B. Dr. Allison B. And I'll send you the information and any announcement when it comes out. It's supposed to come out in January of 2026.
Her book, The Secure Self, should be available January. Just hop on Amazon or go to your local Barnes & Noble.
Yes.
Yep.
Allison, thank you so much for joining us, everyone.
Thank you guys so much.
Until next time.
Have a great day.